All right, so I wanted to share with you an idea that I came across a couple of years ago from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. There's a certain style of learning Tanakh where people take similar phrases that appear in two different places and then they build bridges between those two seemingly disconnected sections of the Torah and explore the similarities and the differences. It's not the methodology of my Rebbeim, meaning my Rebbeim essentially argue that Chazal require a Misora to make a Gzeirah Shavah. We shouldn't be making our own Gzeirah Shavahs. But there are some times where the connections seem particularly strong, and they're not just word connections, but they're also thematic connections as well. You know, the Torah tells us that one is obligated to give Pishnayim to a Bechor, even if he's the offspring of the less favored mother. Essentially, Yerusha is not up to the discretion of the father. You can't favor the son of the wife that you love over by giving him the lion's share of the Yerusha over the son of the wife that you don't love as much. Back in the days when people would marry more than one woman. Your firstborn is your Bechor, end of story, sof pasuk, that's just the way it is. But even a very cursory reading of Sefer Bereishis reveals that the Avos HaKadoshim, Yaakov Avinu, acted in the exact opposite way. And, and Yitzchak, in the end, the result was the opposite, right? I mean, Yitzchak at least tried to give to his Bechor. But Yaakov acted in the exact opposite way. Reuven is the firstborn. He should have gotten Pishnayim. And yet, Yaakov tells Yosef in Parshas Vayechi, Va'ata shnei v'necha noladim l'cha be'eretz Mitzrayim ad bo'i elecha Mitzrayima liheim Ephraim u'Menashe kiruvein v'shimon yuli. Meaning, Yosef, you have two sons, each of them gets a full portion, which means that you, Yosef, are getting Pishnayim, even though you're not the Bechor. So it's no secret why this happened from the beginning. Yaakov favored Rachel over Leah. The Torah says, "Vayahav gamas Rachel mileah, and vayar Hashem ki sinua Leah." And when Reuven was born, Leah was still feeling that rejection. Vatikra shma Reuven ki amra ki ra Hashem ba'ani ki ato yevani ishi. So apparently, his name reflected a prayer that she shouldn't be hated any longer. It doesn't seem that that prayer was answered, because when Shimon was born, she said, so she still felt hated. So essentially what happened over here? The Avos kept Kalatar Kulach Lanitna, right? And yet Yaakov seems to have done the exact opposite of what the Torah itself warns us about Dina Yerusha. Don't give Pishnayim to anybody but your Bechor. The Bechor gets Pishnayim. Don't pay attention to which Isha is the Ahuva and which is the Snua. That's irrelevant. And yet, here we have. This is exactly what Yaakov Avinu did. And the parallels are even more striking when you look at the language that the Torah uses in these two parshas. The word Snua, Rabbi Sacks points out, appears only 6 times in the entirety of Chumash. Twice in describing Leah, which is stunning, it's like shocking, but twice in two of the 6 times when Sinua appears in the Torah, it describes Leah. All 4 other times are in this week's parsha when it describes the rites of the Bechor. All 4 other times. The phrase Reishis Oni appears twice in the entire Torah. Once in this week's parsha, Kihu Reishis Ono, Lo Mishpat HaBechora, and Yaakov's Bracha to Reuven in Parshas Vayechi, Reuven Bechori Ata Kochi V'Reishis Oni. It's as if the Torah is specifically trying to draw our attention to the fact that Yaakov did not follow the halacha over here. So what are we supposed to make of this? So there are suggestions in the Epar Binel, in the Sforno, no time to get into those right now. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks suggests an approach that I think highlights some of the uniqueness of the Torah HaKadosh. You know, when I was growing up, we were always told by our Rebbeim, the Torah is not a history book. Now, that is true to an extent, meaning, maybe we can modify that sentence just a little bit. The Torah is not just a history book, meaning the events described in the Torah, the people described in the Torah, they are historical figures. They did exist. They are not an allegory. They are not a mashal. They are not a figment of someone's imagination. There was a man named Avram, and a man named Yitzchak, and a man named Yaakov. There was a woman named Sarah, and a woman named Rivka, and a woman named Rachel and Leah. These things happened. Chazal quote a single opinion that Eov never happened, among many opinions that Eov did happen and who exactly, what generation he lived in, a single opinion that Eov never happened, and that serves to highlight that everything else did happen. Megillas Esther did happen. All of the other events in Tanakh did happen. So what's unique about the Torah is that usually books of law and books of history have nothing to do with one another. Meaning, one of the uniquenesses of the Torah, and I apologize if I go out in a minute because we're going over a bridge, hopefully we'll maintain connection. One of the unique elements of the Torah is that the Torah is primarily a book of law, but yet there are elements of history and of hashkafa and of everything, of every discipline laced into the Torah, embedded throughout the Torah. I remember I used to teach a high school Chumash class, and my first year teaching, I felt a little lost. What's the goal? What are we trying to accomplish exactly? I would just like read a pasuk and then go through a number of mefarshim, and then like, but to what end? Like, and how much are we supposed to cover? And what? So I spoke to Rav Schachter about it, and I told him I came up with an idea. My idea was that it was the first semester of the year I was teaching Sefer Bereishis, which happens to track to exactly when we read the Parshiyos of Bereishis. So I said, you know, what if each week on, you know, it's a the class met four times a week. So on Monday, we'll do an overview of what it says in the entire Parsha. On Tuesday, we'll pick a section of Psukim to show how Ramban and Ebenezer Parshanut, you know, like a Nechama Leibowitz type of class. On Wednesday, we'll show how we learn Halacha from the Parsha. On Thursday, we'll show some Hashkafa or Musar that's able to be derived from the Parsha. So I asked Rav Schachter what he thought of the idea, and he really liked the idea. He said that that it's important to highlight that Chumash is the book of everything. It is not just a book of Parshanut. It is not just a book of law. Chumash is a book of everything. And a lot of times he did emphasize that when going through different mefarshim, we should emphasize those that are halacha lemaisa more than those that are not halacha lemaisa. But that's the way the Torah is. There's a deep connection between law and history, between what happened in the past and what we ought to be doing. The Torah is sometimes pretty explicit about this. You cannot keep a Jewish slave forever because you were once slaves in Mitzrayim, and you know what that feels like. So we have to give our workers some time off and time to rest, and we cannot oppress them because we were slaves in Mitzrayim, and we know what slavery feels like. So sometimes the Torah presents the halacha as a truth that's learned through experience. The jealousy and hatred of Yosef resulted from Yaakov's favoring him. The Gemara says, "Li'olam al yishana adam ben bein abanim." You should never favor one child over the other. And the Gemara explains, because b'shvil shnei slavim milas, but because of a couple of pounds of silk that Yaakov favored Yosef with, niskalgal adavar v'yarda v'seinu l'mitzrayim. We ended up going down to Mitzrayim. The Jewish people ended up in slavery for centuries. We learn from history what we should do and what we shouldn't do. Meaning, the way the Torah formulates the halacha very often is in the context of history, is to tell us this is the halacha because we are a people that learned the lessons of history. The Ebenezer writes that Dathan and Aviram joined the rebellion of Korach because they descended from Reuven, and the entire Shevet still had lingering resentment for being passed over as the firstborn. Yaakov Avinu was undoubtedly motivated by a great love, but the Torah is teaching us that sometimes love of one person leaves somebody else feeling cast aside. It leaves somebody else feeling alone. It leaves somebody else feeling irrelevant. If a person doesn't balance his love in some way, somebody's going to feel neglected. Somebody's going to feel abandoned. Somebody's going to feel hated. So the Torah is telling us that halacha is rooted in history and is sometimes a tikkun, a way of making right what went wrong in history. So the Avos, yes, they kept the Torah ad shalonitna. And this, there are many ways to explain why it was not a technical violation of the Torah. But maybe the reason the Torah highlights the story of Yaakov giving the double portion and favoring Yosef over the other children is specifically to teach us the lessons of the morality of the halacha that follows. That the halacha that follows comes with real life examples of why it's so critical and why it's so important to understand these halachos. So in general, when we learn Torah, it's always good to appreciate just how deep and how profound and how multifaceted and multi-layered the Torah is. I wish everyone a great Shabbat.